favorites, a guy named Joe Lucina, was here. Joe was in that business, and now he's a stockbroker. Is that a step up or a step down?
I didn't know he was in that business.
Oh, yeah, he was still. So, yeah. He is an interesting
guy. We're hoping that it...
I was in a major question. He was just
comes the boss.
Yes.
Yes. Especially
this guy just walked in. Yeah, man, dog.
Thank you.
Should we wait for Brad or should we start? I suggest we start. Whenever you're ready.
We'll give it one more minute. Dan, is Brad coming?
I hadn't heard that he wasn't, so just Jim.
While we get started, we're waiting for one more member, Brad Bonkowski. We think he's on his way. And here he is. Welcome, Brad. So let's get started with the CAMPO meeting for Wednesday, June 11th, 2014, Community Center Sierra Room. And for people watching on TV, we're glad that you have joined us. CAMPO is pleased to make reasonable accommodation for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend the meeting. If special arrangements for the meeting are necessary, please notify CAMPO staff in writing at 3505 Buddeye Way, Carson City, Nevada, 89701, or comments at carsonareampo.com, or call Dan Donges, 775-887-2355 as soon as possible. Requests are required prior to 2 days prior to the meeting. For more information regarding any of the items listed on the agenda, please contact Dan Donges, Senior Transportation Planner, 887-2355. The agenda and all supporting material is posted on CAMPO website, www.carsonareampo.com, or is available upon request. Kathy, would you please take the roll?
Chairperson Mallory.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Fierro.
Here.
Member Bonkowski.
Here.
Member Erb.
Here.
Member McKenna.
Here.
Member McQuarrie.
Here.
Member Smolenski. Ex officio Member Van Havel.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Kathy. Item B is public comments. Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the MPO? You may now approach the podium and speak on matters relating to the MPO. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future MPO meeting. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item on the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included as an agenda item. Are there any public comments? Seeing none, let's move on to approval of minutes. Do we have a motion for the approval of the minutes of the May meeting?
I move to approve the minutes of April 9, 2014 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Dan, are there any agenda management notice changes?
No changes from staff.
Okay, let's move on to E, disclosures. Any member of the commission have a disclosure? Seeing none, let's move on to public meeting items. This is a possible action item. This is F1. This is to adopt resolution number, whatever it will be, expressing support for the installation of a traffic signal at the intersection of US 50 and Fortune Drive in Lyon County. Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick recap here. Last month at our May meeting, NDOT was asked to come and present some information regarding some improvements they're doing on Highway 50, which included portions of Lyon County. And also, at the time, there was quite a bit of public comment regarding a potential or a proposed signal at US 50 and Fortune Drive in Dayton. And at that time, several members of this board voiced their support of the signal as well and suggested coming back this month with the resolution. So that is what's before you right now for possible action, and I'll turn it over to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Any member comments or questions of Dan? Any comments or questions of anybody in the audience? Are we ready for a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion.
I have a question.
Okay.
Since our meeting, NDOT and the residents of the area and the officials of Lyon County met and had discussions. I would like to ask Commissioner Fierro, is Lyon County still pursuing this? Is it still viable discussion out there, that sort of thing? Because I have no problem at all supporting Lyon County with their needs. I just want to make sure we're discussing something that's been taken care of.
To answer that question, one of our commissioners, Bob Hastings, who is actually in the audience today, set up a meeting last Thursday for the public and for NDOT to meet. I would estimate there was about 100 people from the public that showed up. Concerns were raised about the intersection at Highway 50 and Fortune Drive, and also the Smith's Shopping Center. From my take of that meeting, NDOT is very hesitant to install or finish installing that light due to they feel that it doesn't meet warrants. The part that I was pleased about, it does seem that NDOT is willing to come up with some type of solution. I hope that's true that they do in regards to those two areas within, and it's within a less than a mile area from each other, the Smith's intersection and the Fortune Drive intersection. The public, especially in the Dayton Valley area, definitely wants a traffic signal. Lyon County is still in support of the signalization of that intersection. We're still going to pursue it. We'd like to sit down with NDOT and come up with some type of solutions to make that area a safer location for our residents that either live in the Dayton Valley or have to travel through that section of highway to get to work or to any of their travel plans. So at this point, we're still in favor of the signalization of that intersection.
The other question I have, just for the record, this area or Lyon County is within the Campo jurisdiction, as is Southern Douglas County and Carson City. So this is within our purview.
Any other member comments or questions? Any comments or questions from anybody in the audience?
If I may, Commissioner Bob.
Before you start, your name.
I was going to get there. Commissioner Bob Hastings from Lyon County. One other thing I'd like to throw out there is in regards to the signal light and the support that it has. At the meeting we had with NDOT, and I thank them for coming and discussing it with the county or with the citizens, but I will say that at that meeting, much like we did here last month, we had members of the Sheriff's Department, we had Chief Gillenwater from the Fire Department, we had the Board of Trustees, the School Superintendent, who else did we have, Ray? We had everybody across the board. We had citizens, our advisory board members, all sitting together in unison saying this is something they wanted. And though we appreciate some of the talk of some of the things that NDOT may be able to do with some restriping around SNS, we still are in strong support of the resolution being moved forward so that we can continue this process. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hastings. Anybody else? Are you ready for a motion?
I'll make that motion.
I move that we approve or to adopt resolution number to, and that's going to be determined, expressing support for the installation of a traffic signal at intersection of US 50 and Fortune Drive in Lyon County, item number F1 on our agenda today.
The resolution number will be number one.
Okay, resolution number one.
We have a second.
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Item F2. This is a possible action item to accept the Nevada Department of Transportation fiscal year 2015-2024 work program. Rudy, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rudy Malfabon, the Director of Nevada Department of Transportation. It's an honor to appear before you again this year to talk about our annual work program and give you an update about what's happening on the federal front for transportation funding, as well as some of the other local transportation issues, one of which you already hit on. With me today are some of our partners from Federal Highway Administration, Paul Schneider, who's the deputy administrator there in the Carson City office, Dale Wegner, who's the bridge engineer for FHWA, and Christina Leach, the planning and research program manager. We'd like to acknowledge FHWA for their partnership with NDOT in not just funding, but that's a major part of it. With $320 million roughly a year of federal funds comes to Nevada Department of Transportation. Some of that flows through to the Metropolitan Planning Organizations, as you know. But it's a substantial amount of money, and mentioned some of the things that we're working on to make sure that we're achieving performance for that funding that we receive. From District 2, Thor Dyson, our district engineer, and Steve Williams, really, as we face those funding challenges, Thor and Steve are the ones that are holding the system together. We've got some good projects going on, but we're just not addressing as much of the preservation needs and the capacity needs that, and safety needs that we have throughout this district. So they definitely are our right hand in addressing those issues as much as possible with available funds. From our staff here in Carson City on the multimodal planning department, Tom Greco is my assistant director for planning. Jason, you know, being an ex officio member on your board. Rebecca Capular, Catherine Cucaro, and Pat Torvinen, who's one of the newer members, wanted to acknowledge that she's a member of that planning team now. So anybody that I missed? Let me start out by giving you an update of what's happening on the federal front. The Obama administration had put forth a transportation bill that was a substantial increase in funding for transportation programs. So that includes highways and transit safety. The problem was it didn't identify where that additional funding would come from. And just to set the stage for the funding discussion, we know that currently the federal gas tax, which is about 18.4 cents a gallon for gasoline, is not enough to fund how much the USDOT has granted to the state departments of transportation to spend. So it was a challenge that they were aware of when they approved the current transportation bill called MAP 21. But we were hopeful that they would address it before the expiration of MAP 21, which is September 30th of this year. So the administration's proposed a bill. The Senate Environmental and Public Works, who has responsibility over the highways portion of the transportation system and the funding, not the funding, but the bill that addresses highways, Senator Boxer, the chair of that committee, proposed a bill, was passed in the Senate, and some amendments made to that. But on the House side, you might may have recently heard on the House side that Congressman Boehner had sent a letter, a memorandum to all the Republican members of the House saying, hey, we're going to go for a short-term extension that would be funded by savings from Postal Service deliveries not occurring on Saturdays. So they would still deliver packages such as pharmaceuticals, medicine to people that need that type of delivery service on Saturdays through the U.S. Postal Service. But your regular delivery of mail on Saturday would be curtailed, and the offices would still be open. But that savings would fund this short-term need to address this funding gap, because of the money in the Highway Trust Fund federally will run out sometime around August. So it's a huge issue. What the federal government will have to do is slow down some of the reimbursements to us as a state DOT, which gets us concerned. We want to pay our bills on time just as you do, and if the feds have to slow down, we feel that at least Congress is talking about a short-term solution as well as long-term solutions, but they have to identify where the money is coming from. You can see the difficulties with the Republican proposal in the House that using a non-traditional source of Postal Service savings is not going to really fit the bill for what the needs are for the nation on transportation. So we're definitely going to keep everybody apprised of what's happening on the congressional front for federal funding, and we're anticipating, we provided a letter through the governor's office as the chairman of the transportation board to our delegation giving a list of projects. Unfortunately, the Carson Freeway, which we'll discuss later in the list of projects proposed for the next fiscal year, is one of those that could be at risk of having a lack of federal funds, because that was a federally funded project. Huge project, huge benefits, getting the traffic off of Fairview, but unfortunately it's one of those that if we see a cut in federal funds, we have to figure out what's our plan. It is a significant project that we want to continue with, but we have to see how much federal funds that we are going to receive as a state. And as we develop these types of plans, any kind of changes to that, we'll come back to you and inform you of what we're going to have to do to address that shortfall, should it occur. I'm hopeful that they'll at least pass a short-term extension, even if it's 8 months, as the Republicans are considering, that it'll at least get us partially over short term some assurance of what we're going to be receiving, and we can go forward with some projects. But obviously, some of those projects that are multi-season projects, we're going to be a little tentative about pulling the going forward on some of those projects if we're not assured about a long-term solution. The other thing that the federal government is currently implementing is under the current transportation bill I referred to, MAP 21, they're going through a rulemaking process. So as they give us a substantial amount of federal funds, they want to know, where's this money going to? How are you achieving performance at the state DOT level? The first sets of rules had to do with safety performance. So we've been tracking fatalities on our streets and highways in Nevada, reporting that, and have really done a lot with working with all the folks around rural Nevada, urban Nevada, people that are working in law enforcement, education, emergency medical responders, our engineering staff and the engineering staff of other, the RTCs, the local agencies that deliver projects. So the idea is to recognize that it's not just all projects that are going to solve the safety concerns. We talked about that traffic signal. A traffic signal is one way to possibly look at a safety concern at a spot location. But there's also driver education. And back in the day, as you know, that you probably had driver's ed when you were in school. Now they don't have that as a regular program, so you have to rely on other education sources to educate young drivers on what's the best means of operating a motor vehicle. And there's various programs that work with law enforcement as well to drive down fatalities and identify what are the challenges. But the bottom line is that the federal government wants us to have performance measures, and it would be fatalities, rate of fatalities, serious injuries, and rate of serious injuries on our state roads. Now, the MPOs can also adopt those similar type of safety performance measures at the local level. So one of the things that they've received comment on that safety performance rulemaking is about a non-motorized, or the need for a non-motorized, meaning bicyclists, pedestrians. We see a lot of fatalities associated with bikes and peds, unfortunately, and we want to drive those numbers down as well, not just the people that are operating motor vehicles and commercial vehicles. So that rulemaking process is going on. We provided our comments through the organization of all the state DOTs called ASHTO, but definitely they've extended the the rulemaking for one of those rules, and other rules are going to be coming out. So it's important to pay attention to those. One of them is going to be on the planning side of the House. So they've got a whole slate of rules to do this process with. And as I said, the safety performance measures were one of the first two to come out, and the planning one, I think it might be out now, but there was a recognition that the planning side of it has to tie in with the safety side of it as well, because if there's funding categories there, it all has to mesh together. Some things to update you on other federal programs on the Transportation Alternatives Program, or TAP. We feel that we've got a good process now with electronic submittal of your projects that are proposed, instead of having that annual call for projects, and it's like, wait, I didn't get the notice. And so we avoid that kind of situation. They're still ranked on a regular basis with that same cross-jurisdictional team, but the idea is that the program submittals will come in online as people think about these projects. You don't have to wait for a call for projects. You can just submit the form electronically. And that leads into what NDOT is going to be asking our transportation board to support, is development of an electronic STIP document. The Statewide Transportation Improvement Program is the list of projects that we're going to deliver in that four-year period. So as we go towards an electronic system where it's updated constantly online, it's more transparent, less prone to errors. If you've got a paper document, how do you know you've got the latest version with all the amendments? And I was looking online at, as MPOs, you keep your documents online too as PDFs. So the idea of having an electronic STIP will benefit not only you but the department and a lot of the stakeholders in transportation, as well as the general public, to get the latest and greatest information of list of projects that are approved. We did a lot of workshops last year, 10 workshops throughout the state. The idea is not to just rely on these types of presentations to you, but also to meet directly with your public work staff, your road maintenance staff, to find out what are the issues and challenges that you're facing. Do this across the state. As I said, 10 were held. We're doing a lot more outreach with the tribes as well and trying to understand their challenges with very limited funding and some of these the aging infrastructure on tribal lands and reservations. One of the things that you'll see is a notice about a public meeting for the road relinquishment process. This is something that we worked out with NACO and League of Cities on how to transfer roads that really didn't fit well with being a state highway, should be a local road, a county road. We heard loud and clear from counties and cities saying that we have very limited resources as well as the state, so don't just dump roads on us. Well, that was not the intent, but the idea was to come up with a process that would determine what's a fair way to look at road transfers or road relinquishments to a local agency that's willing to accept those. But what I was getting at about the public meeting was, we didn't notice until the legislation was passed that it said we will make regulations, or the board will adopt, transportation board will adopt regulations. So there's a regulation making process. You do the public meetings, receive the comments, and then issue those regulations after the board adopts them. So we have to go through that process. You'll see a notice for those meetings that will be held. And I assume that they'll be held in Southern Nevada as well as Northern Nevada, so separate meetings and separate opportunities is what we're looking at. And there usually is a comment period that's available on the website, too, associated with this type of regulation making. I touched on highway safety. Unfortunately, we were doing great. We were about 14 below this time last year, and then we had a horrible couple of weeks, a couple of fatalities, horrific fatalities up in Elko. I think there were four just with one accident. We had the two motorcyclists headed to Virginia City over the weekend. Very unfortunate to see these types of fatalities occur on our highways. As I said, we've adopted a program to work in concert with the law enforcement officials across the state, education folks, the people that work in the governor's highway traffic safety office that work for Department of Public Safety. So working with police officers statewide, not just State Highway Patrol, but finding out from educators, how can you change behavior on driving to make sure that people are driving safer, people are buckling up. I think that we would like to see a primary seatbelt law in Nevada. There's pros and cons to that, definitely some strong opinions both ways. But I think that when we can prevent someone from dying on our highways, it's a good thing to see them get home to their loved ones each day. We're wrapping up the I-80 corridor study. We are doing some additional work but the idea was to get a multi-state approach to I-80 and find out what Caltrans has in mind, what Utah and Wyoming have in mind for that, as well as to communicate what Nevada has in mind for I-80. And movement of the freight with commercial vehicles is very critical, and there is going to be a performance measure associated with freight from the federal government. So it's good to do a freight study, which we will be asking our board to support. Often we don't have as much expertise in-house to conduct these types of studies on our own, so we look to consultants to help us with those types of efforts. But the idea is multiple states, it's going to leverage any kind of grant opportunities for those states along that I-80 corridor. And as I mentioned, we are going to study some additional tie-ins with I-80 as far as 395 north of Spaghetti Bowl and look at some issues with traffic and backups there, and maybe some short-term, mid-term, long-term improvements that we could identify from that segment. Now, you touched on the signal at Fortune Drive. I wanted to mention that our concern was more of a liability concern, that we can't install a traffic signal or allow a traffic signal to be installed by a developer unless it meets the traffic signal warrants. And there's various warrants. It could be delay. It could be accidents. Could be fatalities. So some people ask, you know, how many accidents or how many fatals do you have to justify this? And there is a very structured process to do the analysis on traffic signal warrants, and they have not been, none of the signal warrants available have not been met. So unfortunately, we can't allow it. It would be against the national policy, which means that we would be liable if there was an accident if we allowed one to go in. So I'm hopeful that as we engage in taking the traffic counts and we see the traffic counts out there to see or delay times, whatever it takes to justify the signal, that we could work with those parties from Campo and from Lyon County, from Carson City, to look at the safety improvements necessary out there. In the short term, we're going to do what we can apart from installing a signal. The foundations we're in to allow a signal, but we just can't allow the signal to go in without meeting the traffic signal warrant. So I hope that eventually the traffic signal warrants are met. We can allow a signal to be installed at Fortune Drive. Meanwhile, we are doing some improvements on US 50 to address some of those challenges with highway traffic safety on that route. The other issue that's come up recently, more with Carson City, was the sesquicentennial event and the parking situation. We did have a meeting with the legal staff from both parties present and talked about liability concerns, talked about how we could go forward and address those concerns. So we're making progress. I think that we'll have a solution to report back to you very soon, because I know that that's a regional event and a Nevada event that's something that is highly supported and positive. You know, the sesquicentennial is a huge event for Nevada this year, and we want to support where we can, but we want to make sure that we have a solution that's safe and environmentally meets some of those requirements too, because it had to do with environmental issues as well as liability issues. So we're working on it and don't have a solution to report back to you that's signed and sealed and delivered, but we're working on it. I wanted to talk about the Carson Freeway. We do have in our next year's program the substantial $42 million project that would build the infrastructure so that traffic can get off of Fairview all the way down to the junction with US 50 and US 395. We're committed to the project, but as I said, we have to see how much federal funding that we're going to receive. That is probably a two-year project to construct, but we're very aware that it is critical to the community to get that built, and it's going to be a high priority. It's just subject to availability of federal funds. A lot of the other projects that you see in your area have to do with typical maintenance projects, some work much work on bridge maintenance, and we're trying to do a better job of what we conduct inspections on, not just the state-owned bridges but also locally owned bridges, and we try to address some of these issues so that bridge infrastructure is kept sufficient to carry those traffic loads. you've read about some bridges that are so old that, they're actually being considered to be closed in that area near Fernley. It's unfortunate, but that is the challenge for the nation as well as this region to replace some of these this aging infrastructure. That's the situation we're in, and we want to have a more complete prioritization process, but also act upon those inspection reports that we do when we inspect those bridges to bring them up to snuff. You'll see the U.S. 395 structures over the Carson River at Cradle Baugh Slough, and that's seismic retrofit and scour countermeasures. We're trying to implement a scour countermeasures program so that we install devices that let us know, hey, there's going to we got a flood through there. It'd be nice to have some rain once in a while or snow. But if there was a flood, these countermeasures will tell us, hey, you're gonna have a problem with scour. It could put the structure at risk of washing out, and gets us out there to address that in real time. So that those are the types of projects that we're going to do. And lots of maintenance projects on this list, flush seals. Some of them, we list our state forces contracts that we're going to be performing, as well as the construction contracts that we're going to be performing. So quite a list of projects in this area, but I've mentioned some of the larger ones, and the smaller ones are mainly moderate or small maintenance projects. Wanted to also mention that we are considering we're doing the overlay of the pavement on Mount Rose, and we received a proposal from Granite Construction, which I think is a great proposal that would cut the project length in half. It wouldn't be a two-season project. They'd get it done this year. But we want to see that Granite is going to do the proper outreach to all the special event coordinators, the resorts in all the areas up at Tahoe, south of here in Carson City itself, and in Reno Sparks area. So the people are aware of that kind of change in plans. They're talking about a full closure of the road, allow residents to go through, similar to what we did on that successful State Route 207 project recently with Q&D. Everybody was concerned with that Q&D project about that approach of full closure with some passes given to residents and people that were eligible to get through the construction zone, but try to really limit public traffic through the construction zone so they could get it done quicker. The idea is similar to Granite's proposal, but we want them to do some of the legwork in doing the outreach, just as Q&D did with their project. So we believe it's a good proposal. We just want them to do the legwork to make sure that everyone knows about it, because I think that it's supportable as far as reducing the construction time and getting it all done in one season. And wanted to, in closing, just mention that we are trying to do more with bike and ped as well, trying to put more money towards those types of programs. There's obviously not enough to go around in terms of that program, but address some of the safety issues as well, working closely with the bicycle advocates and also with you. As you have responsibility in your area of identifying what are the safe bike routes, bike lanes to have on your system and your region. But the idea is we're trying to do more with the rural counties to develop a statewide bike plan that will seamlessly tie in with your bike plan for your region. So we're doing a lot of effort on that. Heard of some great projects that we can do subject to available funds, but we'll definitely coordinate that program with you as well. With that, I'm willing to take any questions and respectfully request you approve our.
Thank you, Rudy. Any member questions of Rudy?
Ray. Director Malfabon, some comments and questions. I'm curious, out of the 9 warrants from the Federal Highway Administration, warrant number 3, peak hour, and number 7, crash experience, I'm surprised that in reference to the Fortune Drive area that the warrant isn't met on peak hour. It'd be nice if NDOT could provide us the information on that. But number 7 crash experience, is it just within the immediate area of that intersection, or how far from that intersection do you look at crash experience? Because I believe that the Smith's problem could be fixed by the Fortune Drive intersection by stopping that traffic and creating gaps in there. And then the other question I have for you is,
does that warrant, if a warrant's met, is it for the full signalization? Because there's an option possibly of doing half signalization where you leave eastbound traffic free to keep going, but you do a half signal and you stop that westbound traffic, which would, I believe, in my opinion, would alleviate some of the problems there in the Smith shopping center.
Some great points, Mr. Vice Chair. What you described as far as a somewhat of a half signal, the what we call the high T intersection, a signalized intersection, is something that that's been effective in some other locations, so it doesn't affect the traffic that would be going to the east. That is definitely one of the alternatives that we're looking at, but I still think that we have to meet the warrants. And specific to the actual crash information, we could get our traffic operations folks to provide you with the actual technical analysis so that your engineers can actually look at that too, to make sure that it doesn't hurt to have a second set of eyes looking at the information. So we'll make that commitment to give you that information. And definitely we've committed to doing what we can to take the traffic counts. We look at the information that was done before by the developer's traffic engineer. The count information was taken a while ago, but it was taken during the school year, so I know that was a concern from the school district, because it should be justified based on what we observed. But looking at the actual counts, it wasn't enough to justify, but we'll get you that specific information so that you can see what we're looking at.
Thank you. Member McKenna?
The Mount Rose closings, you divert traffic then through Carson City because most likely 80 to Truckee to that area to get to Incline Village wouldn't work very well. So what's the impact on traffic through Carson, especially since the freeway isn't completed? We're going to have more traffic on Fairview.
There is, Mr. Chairman, through you, there is the, we looked at that Truckee alternative as well. And one of the things that people have to factor in would be the delay time. That people that would be exposed to that delay, in our specifications, we say pilot car operation, it's a two-lane road. So you have to stop people, hold them for up to 20 minutes, and then they have to drive through very slowly with a pilot car escort. That delay time that we calculated for that half of the project, because the closure would be over the northern half of the project where it's kind of curvy, but that delay time compared to either going through Truckee or Carson City, I realized that it would increase traffic through Carson. But the idea was that when people are exposed to those delays, they probably will avoid that anyways. Now, when it's a full closure, except to the residents, to emergency vehicles, and school district vehicles and such, then they're not going to, the people that just want to get up to Tahoe, get past or to Mount Rose, would not be allowed to go that route. So definitely some concerns. We hear you that it is going to increase traffic. I don't know if Dyson wanted to mention some of the analysis that was done or some of those concerns that were being looked at.
Yes, thank you. Thor Dyson, district engineer, for the record. Supervisor John McKenna through Jim Mallory. Director Malfabon is correct that there's going to be additional impacts to Carson over Donner Pass, I-82 Brockway Summit to Kings Beach. Granite Construction Company did a very thorough analysis. However, this is just hot off the press, and Rudy was, I believe, traveling earlier today, and I haven't been able to speak to him, but before we get too ramped up on this notion of Granite still wanting to request to close Mount Rose Highway for 12 to 15 days, I'm hearing that now they're balking at that possible option and will revert back to the original plan that the department had laid out. I should know something from Granite Construction by Friday. So it's not signed, sealed, and delivered. It's not a go yet. It's up to the contractor's operations and how they want to proceed doing this project. Yet they need our approval, and we've had some preliminary steps with them. We've gotten an analysis. We've done some minor outreach And like Director Muffelbaum mentioned, they've got to do a lot more outreach and more explanation. But as of 4 or 5 hours ago, what I'm hearing is that they may reconsider that option at all.
One of the parts I was going to bring up is what we really care about is work with our staff for adequate signage and traffic control and that sort of thing. And if we can send them down to Kingsbury after Kingsbury's finished for those going to the south and keeping the traffic off of 50 going west to 28, allow that to be the people going to 28 take 50 and the people going to South Lake Tahoe to go on Kingsbury, that sort of thing, just so no one place gets dumped on heavily. Other questions I had was, what is a primary seatbelt law?
Oh, the primary seatbelt law, currently in Nevada, it's called a secondary seatbelt law, meaning law enforcement can't pull someone over because they're not wearing a seatbelt to cite them. The idea is that we have very good usage of seatbelts in Nevada, but where we see the fatalities, we believe that roughly about half those fatalities would not occur if people were buckled up and secured. That a lot of those fatalities occur when people are thrown out of the vehicle. So very good usage. Other concerns from people that are opponents of primary seatbelt law have to do with, well, the cops might use it for racial profiling or to pull someone over that they normally wouldn't have pulled over. So that is a concern. That, as I said, there are pros and cons to it, but bottom line, because we want to reduce fatalities, we feel that we should support, as a Department of Transportation, we should support that type of approach. It's not a given that the elected officials in Nevada would even support that law. We've asked for it before, and it's failed in the legislature. But as a highway safety advocate, I feel that it's a responsibility of ours to try as much different approaches as possible. Now, changing the law is only one way. You know, you have to have law enforcement. You have to have education. You have to have those other areas, the engineering projects that we do, the emergency medical responders. We've talked to them about, hey, we're doing one thing with cable medium barriers down the middle of a road where you have a median, but that prevents people in an ambulance or a emergency medical responders from turning around. They have to go up the road and find a place to turn around to respond to an accident. So there's issues with all different types of approaches, and that's why we've adopted a strategic highway safety plan to work with everybody to develop those areas. We've identified specific areas where we're seeing problems, such as lane departure or run off the road accidents in rural Nevada, long straight stretches between communities, and people get drowsy, run off the road, overcorrect, and flip, and sometimes they're ejected from the vehicle. So that's one reason why we're looking into primary seatbelt law as one objective way to lower fatalities on our roads, recognizing that there's pros and cons to that approach.
Yeah, I just came back from a meeting in Virginia City, and I see you've started the project out on Highway 15. And looks like there's going to be a barrier there and prevent some of those fatalities. Another thing that's come to our attention is a thing called I-11, freeway from Phoenix to the Canadian border. How do we go about getting involved in that? Because we think it would be good for our economic development if we could run that through Carson City and then up the freeway to Reno.
The I-11 is starting out as a study going just to go back to the federally designated corridor was from Phoenix to Las Vegas. But the idea that Nevada and Arizona had was study it in those two states, where should I-11 go? And it's a list of factors that we looked at to identify what are the best routes to look at. Very high-level corridor-type study, something that you do prior to an actual environmental impact statement type of study, which is more detailed. Very long-term to get to the point of actually doing environmental studies and then getting to construction. But the idea is what you can do as an organization is to pass, similar to what you did with Fortune Drive, pass a resolution to say we support I-11 for these reasons. You can go on the I-11 website and see some of those criteria that were looked at. It's I-11study.com, I believe, is the website. And you can see the criteria that we're, or and there be a, there will be a public meeting announced for that study. And there's also an opportunity to get on the website and provide comments through what we call a virtual public meeting, so that people can see, here's the presentations that we gave at the public meeting, but some people can't make it to a public meeting, so we give the presentations there with the information that we provided, same information from the public meeting. People can receive it and then comment on it through the website rather than showing up in person at a meeting that they were unable to attend.
Just so you know, my thoughts and our thoughts are that since the plan I saw, it came through Hawthorne, and then it headed up to Reno, or out to Interstate 80, and then over to Reno. But if we shortcut that there at Highway 50 and brought it through Silver Springs and Carson City, that would improve economic development in the whole area, and probably wouldn't cost much more from right-of-way because it's existing right-of-way. And we'd appreciate the business, basically. The dynamic message signs that are listed, these are the signs that say wind advisory and things like that. Yes. On the freeway. So you've got to put one in Dayton and one out here on the eastern part of Carson City.
Yes, in the project list.
Okay. The Snyder overcrossing on the south of town, that was supposed to be finished fairly soon. Has that been stopped because of the federal funding problem, or are they going to finish it?
No, it should be finished soon. Let me see. Was it on the...
Here comes your help.
Yeah. I have to look at the... I don't have the list of what we sent to the delegation, but that project should be finished.
Thor Dyson, district engineer, next week.
Yeah. So I was going to say July, but thank you, Thor.
It should be. It's imminent.
So we'll be able to drive fire trucks underneath the bridge next week, or?
Don't hold me to it, but it's soon.
Okay. Fire chief will be happy.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, the list of projects I mentioned was about the future projects, not the ones that were currently under construction. We don't see a problem with or challenge with because the state highway fund is in good shape. When I became director, it was nip and tuck. It was down to $35 million in the highway fund. Now it's above $200. Definitely a lot of good projects that the funds are obligated towards, but it's healthier than 2 years ago.
Well, and the other thing is, we'll talk probably when you finish the freeway to Spooner or the paving, that sort of thing, because we're going to owe you some money when that's finished, and we'd like to apply that to our taking over 395 North,
right,
redoing that road, that sort of thing. But make sure you talk to these guys over here because they're worried about it.
Oh, well, I'm sure we'll work out a deal that's acceptable to both parties.
Any other member comments of John?
Director Moffelbaum, thank you for showing up and presenting to us. Your staff and everybody's done a wonderful job. I appreciate the time. Is there any other projects, say 3R projects, that are on board for this area that aren't in the plan?
There probably will be. What happens is there's the timing of the reviews that we do statewide for all of the roads and what's needed for preservation, which is the 3R program, the overlay program. Sometimes those projects are developed about this time. So I hear that there's a list coming to me as director to sign off on. Some of those projects might have to be accelerated because of the condition. We don't want a road maybe to go through another couple of winters, so we might accelerate some of those. So any kind of changes we would advise you of those types of the 3R program, also to point out, is state highway fund, so it's not typically unless it's one of the major routes like a U.S. highway, it's usually not federally funded. It's usually just state funds on a state route. So any changes we will let you know. We're going to try to do a better job of letting you know the latest and greatest changes to that list. So there's two things that are usually the state-funded programs. One is the districts identified their what we call betterments, And then there's a separate 3R review, which is the pavement overlay projects that usually are happening right around this time. We try to have all that information, at least preliminary, into your project list, but it's possible that there could be some additional projects added, but we will let you know.
Thank you.
Do you have one in mind?
Are there any questions or comments of Director Melfelbaum from anybody in the audience? Commissioner Hastings?
Bob Hastings, Commissioner Lyon County. I'm sure you're all wondering what I'm going to talk about here. I did want to raise one point. It was stated earlier that it is a requirement that the warrants be met in order to put the stoplight. First question that was asked at last week's meeting was, has there ever been situations in the state of Nevada where warrants were not met, yet a stop sign or a signal light was put in? Though NDOT did admit that it's very rare, few and far between, they can make the decision to put in a stoplight without the warrants being met. Mr. Garza, who was presenting that portion, did state that it was his opinion that it didn't help at those intersections, that it didn't reduce the number of accidents, but we weren't given any specific statistics to back that up. But it is in their purview to put in a stoplight, even though the warrants haven't been met. So, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
If I may follow up, please.
Sure.
One of the things I'm aware of is that sometimes when there's a big box store, a Walmart, or a casino, signals lights have been installed, although warrants haven't been met, because we know, based on the traffic study, that it will be met on opening day, and it just doesn't make sense to go out there and do the counts to, you know, have a huge snafu with the traffic on opening day. It's not beneficial to the business and to the public safety. So those are a case where I'm aware of where a signal has been allowed to be installed, recognizing that we have to actually measure the traffic, actual traffic to meet warrants. It's not a projected traffic to meet warrants. It's actual delay, actual traffic accidents, actual traffic issues that you measure volumes. So those are the cases where NDOT has actually allowed before, but it's realizing that, yeah, on opening day it's going to meet. So just a way to meet people in the middle. On Fortune Drive, you know, that's a case where we still would have that liability. It's just unacceptable to the state to put one in and then have rear-ender crashes are most likely would be what the issue of concern would be to the Department of Transportation. Somebody gets injuries from a rear-end collision because they were stopped at a stoplight that was at an unwarranted signal. We're the ones that get sued. And I'll be on the stand saying, Mr. Melfelbaum, Director Melfelbaum, why did you allow this? Did not meet warrants, right? So that's the dilemma for us as the Department of Transportation. We're willing to help out as soon as we do have actual counts or warrants met there. But
Member McKenna?
Is there any way Lyon County could mitigate that liability of the state or join in it, that sort of thing? They want a stoplight there, and
they seem to be willing to pay for it. Even if Lyon County offered to say, we'll take on the liability, because people, litigants, are going to see the state as deep pockets, they're going to sue us anyways, and they'll sue everybody. I've seen these issues arise with unfortunate fatalities that occur on highways, and we get sued all the time, even though it was, in my opinion, the driver's fault or some other driver's fault that caused the fatality. So.
Any other member comments of Director Melfelbaum? Anybody else in the audience? Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is an action item.
Oh, yes.
Can we have a motion to accept?
I motion to accept the fiscal year 2015 to 2020 work program as presented by NDOT.
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? Any discussion from anybody in the audience on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. We're going to move to item F3 for possible action to approve the Campo policy on competitive transportation process for FTA Section 5310 grant funding. Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. what we have before you is a policy that will basically outline steps we need to do to, I guess, sub-allocate Section 5310 FTA funds, Federal Transit Administration, to eligible entities. And what those funds are for are basically enhanced mobility of seniors and individuals with disabilities. CAMPO receives a direct allocation of that. Our current FY 2014 apportionment is approximately $108,000. We do use those ourselves, and it's really up to the discretion of the board if we want to, you know, sub-allocate those to other interested parties. This is the first time we've kind of been faced with this. We need to have a policy in place before we actually start making some of those decisions. I believe there's probably two entities that I'm aware of now that are interested in receiving them, but that's really not the topic of discussion tonight. We wanted to get this policy in place prior to actually bringing forward any potential requests for funding. So and basically what constitutes as eligible, they must be subrecipients must be a state or local government authorities, private nonprofit organizations, or operators of public transportation. And eligible activities to use the funds include to serve special needs of transit-dependent populations beyond the traditional public transportation service, projects that exceed requirements of ADA, and projects that improve access to fixed route services to basically reduce reliance on paratransit, and also basically projects that are alternatives to public transportation. So with that, we're looking for approval of the policy. Oh, I should mention one other thing. NDOT is really the direct recipient of these funds, so they have an application in process in place, which they apply statewide. They informed us that, you know, they wanted to give us the ability to decide who should receive funding through any eligible requests, and that basically if we approve of an entity that wants to apply for these funds, then they would go through NDOT's application process, which is already in place. Turn it over for any questions.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions of Dan? Any comments?
So what would our policy entail? Would it be just somebody apply for it and say they'd like the money, or would we have criteria in it? Would we have annual allocations of how we're going to establish the criteria? What type of policy does it entail?
Sure. I mean, basically for you is what the policy we have written is. Obviously, we can modify it as appropriate. But there is also some scoring criteria that NDOT uses that we may suggest looking at before presenting any eligible entities. We certainly wouldn't want to surprise the board on the fly and say you need to make a decision without having some background information before that. Also, this policy outlines kind of the notification process. So, as I mentioned, this year our apportionment is $108,000, and we generally receive roughly the same amount every year. It's always stepped up a little bit. But we have a whole notification process that we've outlined as far as advertising and like the appeal, putting up notices on our website to inform people, and then they have basically like a 30-day period to approach staff to say they're interested and they intend to apply for funds. At which point, we would allow them to present their interest in applying for these funds before this board, and then the board would then make a decision to approve or deny, or, you know, if there's more than one, we could approve more than one as well. As I mentioned, you know, we use these funds ourselves for the JAC transportation service, but, you know, it's there basically for disabilities, you know, and seniors and those that are disabled, so we certainly would be willing to part with them for the greater good sort of thing, so.
Okay, I guess what I was looking for was they submit the policy, they submit the application to the board. The board sits here, and whatever board is sitting at that time would have decide at that particular time what they favor at that particular time, or are we looking more for a resolution that said the board going into locking the boards in the future into programs for the elderly, programs for youth, etc., that sort of thing. You're just looking for a procedure for people to fill out an application, get it to staff, staff get it to camp, the capital board, however it's constructed at the time, and then those people set what they like at the time. Okay.
Yeah, correct, for that year. So it'd be an annual notification process. And so just if you awarded it to one party 1 year, it doesn't mean you would do it, you know, you'd be holding to do it again the following year.
Right. What I was unclear of was if you wanted us to set, we're going to primarily favor this group over that group. And you're saying that's not required by federal rules and...
No, no, okay. Not at all.
Any other, Brett?
I assume that Jack can use all of these funds plus additional funds if they were available. So having clarified that, I'm just wondering why we're opening this up for sub-allocation, which is just going to dilute funds that we already have a use for.
We, through the new MAP 21 performance, it's been outlined that we are required to have a notification process to at least inform entities that are eligible to apply. There's nothing that says we're required to give them away, but so we're basically following the transportation authorization that informs that we are doing our due diligence to inform people that these funding is available for eligible activities.
So we'll set up the policy, we'll set up the notification system, but if we have a use for all of the funds each year, then we would just notify any sub-applicants that we don't have any excess funds to sub-allocate.
Yes, that'd be one potential outcome.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Member Fierro?
Dan, what would this be a one-time shot per year, or what if a situation came up where there's still some additional funds? Would we be able to do that notice within that year or another time?
We're looking at it as a one-time shot. We typically get notice of allocation, I believe it's around March. Admittedly, we're a little behind on this, but so it's an annual allocation, and following that notification of the funds that we're to receive for that specific fiscal year, then we would then advertise for, put the notice out that the funds are available.
Anybody else? Anybody in the audience? Any questions of Dan? This is an action item. Can we have a motion?
I move to approve the CAMPO policy on competitive transportation process for Federal Transit Administration, Section 5310 grant funds.
Second.
Any comments or questions on the motion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Let's move on to item F4. This is also an action item, and this is to authorize the transportation manager to sign agreement number PR 231-14804 for commitment to complete the federal fiscal year 2015 Unified Planning Work Program, and to authorize the transportation manager to sign future amendments to this agreement regarding time extensions or a change in the value of funding of up to 20% of the initial funding amount. Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is basically an annual agreement that comes before us for the expenditure of our UPWP, Unified Planning Work Program funds, for this particular ones for the federal fiscal year 2015. And basically, it's kind of NDOT's best guess what would be available, because they don't actually receive verification of obligated funds until, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's around October or...
Well,
the real amount of money that's going to be available for Campo for their planning purposes is going to be up in the air for a variety of reasons. I mean, partly because of the status of the Federal Transportation Authorization Act, how it's going to expire, the information that Rudy had presented. So we really don't know for sure how much is going to be available in 15. But any money that was not fully utilized in 14 will automatically carry forward and be available in 15. So we don't know how much was fully utilized in 14 until that year is done. And by that time, we're into 15. So we take our best guess, and then later when we get later in the fiscal year, when we get firmed up numbers, we'll send an amendment through and finalize that number.
Correct. And we've worked with MDOT staff and given them our best estimate of what we will have from carryover for this year, and to make sure also that there's enough there to satisfy the tasks we've outlined in our work program, and we don't foresee any shortcoming whatsoever. So,
thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jason. Any other comments or questions of Jason or Dan? Brett?
On the cooperative agreement, the local match portion, which I believe is supposed to be 5%, it shows that it's $33,050, which is not 5%. So can you tell me why that's different?
Sure. This is always a little bit confusing, but listed in our transportation improvement program, there are funds that we receive as a direct recipient that Campbell receives, and it's basically we budgeted for $30,000. FTA has told us in the past that it should not appear in our work program, but it is in our transportation improvement program. I don't really know the logic behind that, but we have to account for that because we receive the contribution from the member counties such as Lyon and Douglas as well. So when we show our work program, it's in there, but it's not coming from the same funding source. But that might be a typo, actually, because thank you for bringing that up. Now that I look at it, this is supposed to just focus on the CPG funds, and I think there might be some extra funding in there. So we might have to make a revision to that.
So do we want to continue with this item until we have clarification on that?
We can, I could bring it back if that's the board's favor. We can do it again next month.
Are there any issues with delaying it by a month?
I don't. I really actually have to ask NDOT to weigh in on that one.
It will make it difficult for us. It could potentially delay reimbursements to Campo because we'll need to have this executed agreement in place in order for us to be able to send reimbursements to Campo.
So are there any issues with the number being wrong in the agreement?
At this point, I'm not aware of any because it's outlined that it's an estimate at this point. We plan on getting it firmed up as the fiscal year progresses. But I did notice that as well, that the sum of the two numbers, 33,000, is not 5% of the sum of the two numbers because you can tell it's less than 600,000.
Right, even if you use that as the 5% and add it and assume that the 552,950 is 95%, it still doesn't work.
Right. Yep.
So, since it does say that it's an estimate, I'm okay with moving forward if the rest of the board is.
What's the pleasure of the board?
Move forward.
Move forward. Yeah. Anybody from the audience have any questions of Dan or Jason? I guess it's time for a motion.
Okay, I'll make it. I don't believe that the error in the amount of local match, as stated, is going to make a actual change in the amount the local match is because of the adjustment and also the 20% factor that we build into these. I move to authorize the transportation manager to sign agreement number PR231-14-804 for commitment to complete the federal fiscal year FFY 2015 Unified Planning Work Program and to authorize the transportation manager to sign future amendments to this agreement regarding time extensions or a change in the value of funding of up to 20% of the initial funding amount.
We have a, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any discussion on the motion from anybody in the audience? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Item G. Dan, internal communications and administrative matters. Future agenda items.
The only future agenda item I am absolutely positive we will have is draft transportation improvement program for fiscal years 2015 through 17. Is that right?
Number
18. Sorry. and there might be a couple others, but they're working out some timing issues. So, but for sure, we'll be seeing a draft tip.
There is one more that is even more imperative than that, and that is the election of a new chair. I wish to thank Commissioner Mallory for his service. 5.5 years has taken the roads in this area to a new level, a high level, and through his hard work. And I really thank you for his service.
Thank you. Any other future agenda items? Board comments? Jason?
I have some more information on I-11. If you'd like that here now, fine. If you'd like me to take it offline and have some conversations about it, that's fine. Is it your choice?
I-11 is a 20 to 30 year project, at least, I think. So I don't care either way if the gentleman here want to hear it. I'd be happy to. Otherwise, I just want to make sure Carson City and Western Lyon County have an opportunity to get involved in this, because even if we don't get the actual I-11, but we get a major tributary to it, it will help the economic development, especially of the Lyon County area.
What's the board's pleasure on that? Defer? Defer. John?
I've reviewed a lot of it already online, so I'm pretty familiar with it.
Do you have any member comments? Ray?
I'd just like to thank the Campo Board for the support of the resolution. I think even if the signalization of Fortune Drive doesn't go in the very near future, the very least what's happening is that NDOT's aware that that section of Highway 50 is not as safe as it should be. So thank you.
Okay. I guess the only last member comment I have is thank you, Member McKenna, for that recognition. And I think we've done a lot of good things, all of us together, in the last 5.5 years here. And it's time for me to move on, and I'm going to. So when I wanted to move on after 4 years, my arm got twisted really bad in my socket by Shelley, and she asked me to stay on a little bit longer. So I stayed on. I agreed to stay on 6 months. I've actually ended up staying on 18 months, but it's time to move on. Under public comments, is there anybody in the public that wishes to address the MPO? You can come to the podium, you can speak, you can talk about any matter not specifically included on the agenda. Very similar to what we said earlier, you can have it agendized if you want. At a future meeting, just discuss it with the chair. No action can be taken, raised on an item, unless it's specifically included as an agenda item in a future meeting. Anybody from the audience? Mr. Hastings.
My name is Larry Hastings, no relation to Bob, the politician. But I just wanted to come here and thank Jim, too. The 4 years prior to him being on the commission, I sat in that seat, and it was a good experience, and I told Jim, and I talked him into it. I don't know. But I've known Jim for 40 years. I worked with him for 30 years. We actually hired him at NDOT, and I just wanted to say thank you, Jim, and he did do a good job. I taught him well. And one final comment for all of you 49er fans, and for those that aren't, today is a day to celebrate. It's Joe Montana's 56th birthday. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Anybody else in the audience? Any other member comments? Jason?
Well, since you brought up football in light of Mr. Mallory's retirement, I was made aware of a situation in prior years where Mr. Mallory, along with one of his co-workers, Bill Story, were down in the Bay Area in spandex head to toe with their their bike apparel, and they boarded BART on, happened to be on the day of an Oakland Raider football game, and BART was loaded with fully decked out Oakland Raider fans, and those two were in their spandex head to toe. May have been nice to be the fly on the wall that day.
Yeah, we had a stand the whole way under the bay and everything, but we got it taken care of. Can we have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Okay, this meeting's adjourned. The RTC meeting will start in 5 minutes.
That sort of thing.
But then we can name it the John McKenna Memorial Highway.
I'll be dead. I don't care. You can name whatever you want. I guarantee you in 40 years I will be dead.
How do you get through Montana and the mountains there? I guess you'd have to go out through
and maybe that's what happens, but, you know, it's like the Olympics. If you want to have an Olympics, you start now, and then 40 years from now, you have one. And then you go, what the hell are we doing for? That's a whole different discussion.
In 40 years, you probably go right through Walker Lake.
Yeah.
What does Beatty and Tonopah think? Or would there be bypasses around those towns?
Tonopah has gone on record to say that they want it. And I think that they're expecting a bypass. Beatty, I've not heard anything from them directly. But in general, Knight County is lobbying very hard for it, I think.
Yeah, I heard it. I think the other news that I saw was basically up to Hawthorne. And then it either branches right or branches left. Or actually goes straight.
Yeah, and some of the alternatives, once you get to Hawthorne area, or it goes directly north, I-80, or branching west, picking up 395, potentially in California even, and then coming up the 395 corridor, or the 95A corridor.
That's called the 6 and then up 395.
Yeah. It's a variety of possibilities.
Well, it's... It's something that some people should be talking about.
Well,
because I think the decision will be made which way you go, probably 10 years maybe.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, so.
Or 40 years.
No, it won't be built for 40 years. But it,
no, but I mean,
it's like, you know, like our freeway.
I got my first notice for relocation for 580 in 1980. And it's not done yet, so it could be 40 years.
Especially with the money and that sort of thing.
So, technically speaking, unless Congress specifically states that it will follow, for example, the U.S. 95 corridor, then the NEPA process will identify different corridors as alignments, and the NEPA process will cash out and identify the actual alignments.
We can probably get Avenue to do something about it.
If Congress were to actually state that I-11 is this corridor will connect these two population centers, it will make it a whole lot easier to get it.
Thank you.
Not necessarily as a state resource, but the easier to get it into that state building.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to him about it. It's just for fun.
Thanks, Jason.
Super. You said they go on the tall transportation district board.
No. Enough of that. Pretty much.
Well, take care.
Thanks, Jason.
Ready? Let's get this over. You guys ready?
Sure. I call the meeting of the Carson Regional Transportation Commission to order. This is Wednesday, June 11th, 2014. We're in the Sierra Room in Carson City. It's about 10 till 6. First item on the agenda is roll call.
Chairperson McKenna?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Smolenski, Commissioner Bonkowski?
Here.
Commissioner Mallory?
Here.
Commissioner McQuarrie?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is public comment. Does anyone in the public have comment? Thank you. I see none. Moving on, we'll do approval of the minutes of April 9th, 2014.
I move to approve the minutes of April 9th, 2014 as presented.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of April 9th, 2014. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, it passes. Next item on the agenda is item D, agenda management notice. Does anyone want to take anything out of order? I don't see anybody moving or hear anything. Next item on the agenda is disclosures. Any member of the commission that may wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission? Hearing none, seeing none, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. This is a public meeting item, F1, for possible action to approve an interlocal agreement between Carson City and the University of Nevada, Reno for the purpose of technical assistance with the Carson City Pavement Management System.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Staff, a few months ago, met with a professor from UNR that is a specialty, is all about pavement management, and we kind of discussed at length what the university could do to help the city with its pavement management program, and What you have before you is a proposed agreement between us and you and ours in the Pavement Management Preservation Program, in which they would offer an analysis and technical assistance in support of us. And the goal for all of this is just to help the city spend its limited resources more wisely, to get the biggest bang for a buck. And the timing is good as well, as we're going to be doing a pavement inventory probably toward the end of the summer here. And there's a lot of things that have changed since the last time this was done. Particularly, we've kind of inherited some more roads from MnDOT and whatnot. So we're going to have a good base point to start with, and they're just going to basically help us come up with the best management program possible.
So this is going to cost $45,000 per year for a two-year period, total $90,000. What do we give up to acquire that $90,000? Don't pave a street, don't put in a bike lane, that sort of thing. That's what type of answer I'm looking for. Other details of the contract, is it a standard contract? Can we cancel it at any time? That sort of thing. Can we also specify who we want to use? If they have one expert, we want that expert versus a different one.
Sure, and in the agreement, it does address some of those questions. We do have, either party actually has the ability to terminate the agreement with 30 days written notice. The person particularly that will be doing the work for us is Dr. Eli Hodge is his name. And in the agreement, it says, no other person shall replace or substitute for him in the supervisory responsibilities without prior written approval of the university. And, of course, you know, if that's not amenable to both parties, again, we have that option to terminate the agreement. And as far as invoicing, they have an outline schedule that basically just take that $45,000 and divide it by 12 payments, 12 monthly invoices. Yes, I mean, it is a significant sum of money. You know, I don't know how to really phrase it in terms of quantity of road that we wouldn't, you know, pave otherwise, but I think really the benefit that we'll receive from this and just the ability to make more informed decisions will provide significant savings in the long run for our maintenance program.
Along those lines, Dan, do we have any idea what those anticipated savings might be, or do we need to wait for their analysis and look at the different options?
I think we'd have a better handle on that once we kind of do our baseline inventory. Again, I don't have a number to quantify that. I don't know, Darren, if you want to stop.
Basically, we're convinced that our current program for pavement maintenance and rehabilitation is outdated. And so Patrick and I attended a conference where the University of Nevada had a presentation and spoke about pavement maintenance, and we were impressed by what they offered, and it was way above our expertise in pavement maintenance. So that's how this thing got started. So we don't anticipate that they're going to save us any money, but what we need to really have a paradigm shift in the way we're going about pavement maintenance. Right now, every 8 years, we basically slurry our roads in a section of town. But what we've learned is that's not the most effective way to spend your money on your roads. In some cases, it's better to leave a road deteriorate as it is and use your money to fix another road completely, as in remove and replace the asphalt. And they're going to help us with those decisions, those recommendations. Ultimately, it will be our decision to do what we want. But so we don't, I mean, yes, they're going to save us money because we're going to get more bang for our buck, but there's not a dollar value that at the end of the year, well, we didn't have to spend this money because we saved it here. It's just we're going to spend our money more wisely.
Should we have any concerns about our ability to implement any recommendations? In other words, we have this analysis done, they come back with recommendations for us to follow, and then we don't have the money to actually follow those recommendations?
Part of it, that's a very good question. Part of it is we are going to tell them at the beginning of the year how much money we have for that year, and they're going to build a program around based on that amount of money. So that's it. They get, you know, this is how much we've got for this year, $900,000, for instance. What's the best bang for our buck for that amount of money? And that's where our program is going to be generated.
And then I do have a recommendation on page 3 of the agreement, on line 3 under number 4. It says, if the breach is not cured within a reasonable time, we should probably specify a number of days there instead of leaving it ambiguous. And I don't know, you can, you know, make a determination of what a reasonable amount of time is. I just don't think that that should be left the way it is.
Darren, I've got two questions. One, is it going to require any more city personnel?
No.
To implement the recommendations of UNR?
No, it will not.
Will it require any more capital equipment? More advanced maintenance, pavement maintenance equipment, or whatever?
No, it will not. If typically the recommendations that they will make, it's all, we contract it all out now anyway. So we would still contract out the project. It would just be a requirement for a different type of maintenance work. So they're not going to tell us, as far as us going out and crack filling and fixing potholes, which we do with city staff and city equipment, they're going to tell us what capital projects to build, which we bid out and use a contractor service for.
And then are there any implied or sort of guarantees that following their maintenance procedures will benefit better, longer-lasting pavement, or however the performance measures are determined for this?
It will be based on a performance measure. What Dan alluded to is we go out and do an analysis of our streets, and then the idea is we will do that every 3 or 4 or 5 years, with the idea that we're doing a better job of maintenance. So it's kind of implied, and this group is working with various other entities around this region providing this same service, and because of their research capabilities, they have, you know, a much broader spectrum of what's happening to our pavement here based on weather and vehicles, and they understand that a lot better. So we feel like they're experts in this, and they can only help.
Thank you.
Trying to put together some thoughts on this. So this isn't a change in using the materials that we're using now. It's more in a change in the way we apply those materials, or we're not going to change to cement from oil and that sort of thing.
That's a good question. Actually, it's both. We're having them also look at our specifications, that when we put new asphalt down on the road, we're having them look at that specification that we require, because what happened 20 years ago with the specification of asphalt, you'll notice that we have these pretty good cracks in a lot of our streets for roads that were paved 20 years ago or more. That is a direct result of the specification of asphalt. Since then, through research, they've discovered that you add certain additives to your asphalt, and it helps to limit and reduce those big wide cracks. So in addition, they're also looking at that for us, as far as what product we're putting down on our road to make sure that it does the best for our Northern Nevada climate and vehicles. The second part of your question, as far as them, basically what we're going to get away from is this, is where we just go out and we just slurry seal every street in a region. We're going to get away from that, and we're going to slurry certain streets. We're going to save some money and micropave certain streets. And other streets, we're not going to put anything on it. We're going to leave it as it is, take that money, and for this block, we're going to rip out all the asphalt and put down 3 new inches of asphalt, because that's for bang for your buck. That's where you should be spending it.
Could we acquire this knowledge without paying for it?
Not that we were able to come up with. I mean, No. I mean, you could go out and hire, yeah, you'd have to hire, you know, hire an expert. The advantage with going this way as compared to hiring a consultant who has people on staff is, you know, we would be paying multiplications times this for that type of a service. So going through the university is definitely the most economical.
So is the intent then to revisit this in 2 years, at the end of this 2 year period, to see if we've actually met the performance objectives and to see if this was actually a valuable exercise?
Yeah.
And then at that point, you would come back to us and ask us to either renew it or give us an update and tell us we shouldn't renew it?
That's right. And the idea, too, is spending 2 years with them with recommendations and what they're doing, we're gonna learn from that. We're going to soak that up, and really it will help us in the future. So I don't see this going up in the future. I see it maybe being reduced. Whether or not we ever want them to completely go away, we may just use them on an advisory basis. That's kind of how I see it in the future.
Hey, Darren, you mentioned other communities. So other communities have used their service, and have you talked to them and seen
yes, we have.
What they've done different?
Yep. Washoe County, I mean, for instance, is our nearest neighbor, big county, that they're doing this exact same thing right now, because it's when you can go through the university and that their research capabilities, I mean, they, you know, their master's degrees and what they're getting up there, I mean, that's what these guys do for 8-10 hours a day. It's, I mean, they can provide us some pretty high power level of what we should be doing better, and so it's not just us, it's definitely region wide.
I guess my final question is John's original question, which I don't feel like I got an adequate answer to. If we approve this and we spend this $90,000, is that going to have a financial impact on our ability to do other work that we already had planned?
Not necessarily other work that we had planned, but it is going to impact the amount of money that we can spend directly on maintenance. So for this next year, yes, it will take $45,000 out of the money that is used for maintenance of a road that won't be spent on the asphalt. It will be spent on somebody's brains, you know, to tell us how we're doing things.
And you think the investment is worth it?
I certainly do, wholeheartedly.
Thank you.
Any other comments, public comments? Mrs. Bagwell.
Good evening, Lori Bagwell. I guess more it's just a general question is, I don't understand if it's I don't think 2 years will be significant enough for you to have any performance measures to determine whether or not the contract should continue. If you're going to study it for a year and then have a result for a year, you're not going to know whether or not the road lasted longer yet. So I'm just putting that on the record that you aren't going to have a performance measure that quickly. So I'm just letting you know, if you go down this road, you're probably looking for a few years. And I'm not saying it's a bad suggestion, because I think that roads in Carson City are in pretty bad shape, and maybe having an expert help you truly determine the best method. And I think that's what you're actually alluding to here, is looking at the best method to repair our roads. Right. But I just want to put on the record, I don't think a two-year contract's going to give you any great performance measures yet. So
would you care to address that, Darren, about, you know, why are we changing what we've been doing in the past, or why are we looking for different ways of doing this? Because she's right, it's going to be 10, 20 years before we see whether this works well.
Right. What we've been doing is outdated, and no, you know, I don't want to, you know, push anybody out there. I mean, we were doing the best we could, but it's outdated, and it's our pavement maintenance program has been, we go through town and we just slurry these streets. We put a seal on them, we crack seal and we put a seal on them. But they've studied that extensively for this region, and they've determined that the amount of money that you're spending to do that, you're not getting bang for your buck, so to speak. And because that's outside of our understanding expertise, we're using them to help us give some guidance as, well, how better should we be treating our pavement, or what should we be doing, what different types of applications should we be doing to better use our money. So that's the goal here. Now, what's been established is a level of service for streets citywide. It's a big average number, and that's going down with time, and they're very aware of that. So what they will do is they will look at all of those data points that we collect all over the city. There's thousands, hundreds of thousands of them, and they will analyze that data and determine what's the best fix for the problem to slow that level of service curve as best we can. It's going to continue to drop until we can provide enough funding to maintain it, but right now we can't. So the goal is to slow that curve going down as best we can with these new options as far as treating pavement.
So what you're basically saying is that, well, it may take there may be a time frame before we can tell what the results are on our project, but the work that these people have done have proven over a time period that elsewhere their methods are more successful than the ones we're using.
That's right. I alluded to Washoe County. So they've been doing it for Washoe County for, I believe, 6 or 7 years. So they have more of a history with Washoe County, and they've changed. Washoe County's now changed the way they're looking at their street maintenance based on this group's recommendation. And Washoe County has positive results by doing that. So that's why we feel comfortable we're going the right direction.
So to address Lori's comments, actually what I said was that we would be able to measure, or I asked you if we'd be able to measure the performance objectives, not necessarily the actual work to be done. So my understanding is that we don't necessarily have the in-house expertise to be able to inventory and analyze the conditions of our roads and what the best method of maintenance and repair is.
That's exactly right.
Secondly, that if we use an outside firm who has expertise in this matter, that we should be able to increase the longevity of our roads, considering that gas taxes are decreasing every year.
That's right.
So it's what we would be looking at the end of 2 years would be the recommendations that were made and the methodology that has been presented to us to see if we feel that that is adequate to provide us with not only savings but also the longevity of our actual streets.
That's right.
Okay, so I think I'm clear.
Very well spoken.
Darren, I have just one more question. Since you brought up Washoe County, did Washoe County do it for 2 years, or has Washoe County continued the contract with UNR continuously?
They have continued to contract with UNR over this time period. I don't know the level of that contract, you know, how much it is or how much, you know, they're providing as far as oversight. You have to understand that at the beginning, it's a real ramp up for UNR because they, like I told you, those hundreds of thousands of data points, that all has to be populated and put into their system. So initially, but once it gets running, the idea is it doesn't require as much effort from them, and furthermore, it will kick out the results to us, and we'll understand what it's telling us to do. So my understanding is that Washoe County initially probably spent more and is now spending less, but I do know that they continue to contract with them every year.
So do you feel that will be the same with Carson City, that it'll be $45,000 a year, and then maybe in 3 or 4 years it'll be $20,000 a year?
That's what I would anticipate.
I mean, would it ever end, or would it be a continuous process?
I think it would go down significantly, but my recommendation right now is that we would never completely get rid of it, because we're never going to have on staff this type of expertise where we can get these kind of answers or go ask these kind of questions. And if we have to hire a private consultant to do it, you're going to pay four times of this.
So part of this is, for lack of a better term, because I'm not a payment guy, but it's like core samples and falling weight deflectometers and things like that. They're actually going to come down here and test what we have.
That's right.
So they'll take it to the lab and
yep.
and
they have a full lab up there, all part of this. That's right.
Okay, so it's more than just standing on the curb and looking at it and giving advice.
That's right.
Okay, thanks.
And just to clarify, you're not recommending anything past the 2 years in this agreement today, right?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
Other public comment, other board comment? Motion.
I move to approve the interlocal agreement between Carson City and the University of Nevada, Reno for the purpose of technical assistance with the Carson City Payment Management System with the addition of a specific number of days under paragraph 4, page 3.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any comments, public comment? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Next item on the agenda is F2 for possible action to authorize transportation manager to execute the interlocal contract with the State of Nevada Division of Healthcare Financing and Policy for the reimbursement of paratransit assessments for Medicaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is basically an agreement that we have with, make sure I don't butcher the name, DHCFP. Basically, when someone, we require disabled riders to go through an application process to ride the paratransit, and they do a Medicaid evaluation, and we are basically getting reimbursement. Jack is getting reimbursement for those evaluations, and it comes out to, $26 and some change for per assessment. It's pretty much a nominal amount of money. We're not talking about a huge amount, but it's every bit helps, and we're just looking to approve this agreement. Thanks.
My first question is, this contains the usual 20% up or down and change of time statement. What's the history? Is it likely that we're going to have a significant change in funding once this is signed?
I don't believe so. We do kind of have this kind of standard language that we've adopted when, I think it's about a year ago now, when the board started, or the commission started approving the transportation manager to sign these agreements. But we don't anticipate really any change with this particular agreement.
Who is the transportation manager?
That'd be Patrick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Questions of the board? Public comments, questions? I'll entertain a motion.
I move to authorize the transportation manager to execute the interlocal contract with the State of Nevada Division of Healthcare Financing and Policy for the reimbursement of paratransit assessments for Medicaid recipients on the Jack Assist Service, and to authorize the transportation manager to sign future amendments to this agreement regarding time extensions or a change in the value of funding of up to 20% of the initial funding amount.
It's been moved and seconded. Comments? Public comments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It carries. Next item on the agenda is G, Internal Communications, Street Operations Report, G2, Project Status Report, and then G3, I'd also like to add, I guess we'll have a replacement for Mr. Mallory next meeting. So I want to thank him for his dedicated and intelligent service, and anybody that would put up with streets and the frustration of no funds for as long as he did deserves our thanks.
Second.
Please, G1, G2,
sure.
G1. Street operations report. It's pretty standard. One thing that's really upticked here is our work on weed control this time of year. You'll see them out and about, both cutting, mowing, weed eating, but also spraying. So we're trying to catch up with it. Because of that late rain that we got, which was such a blessing, it really hit us in the weeds this year, and so they are springing up all over. So that's a big part of G1. G2, it's pretty straightforward as far as our projects, but did want to announce that we did get final approval by NDOT actually late by our standards, but early by theirs, as far as the Hells Bells project. And so we are now planning to go out to bid on that later this month. So that's encouraging news. The rest of them are moving forward, including the project, the Fairview Drive Median project, which we awarded last fall, but we lost the temperatures to put the concrete down. So that'll be going here this month, later this month too, that work. So that project that'll be completed in a couple weeks, pretty quick. So,
Darren, a question on the Hells Bells project. Since that was the funding was authorized in the fiscal 13-14 year, which ends here in a couple of weeks, is that just going to be a roll forward?
It will be. It will just be a roll forward, an augmentation, moving it same account number to the next year.
On the Hells Bells project, are you going to get it done before the kids come back? Otherwise, you're going to have footprints all over that thing.
That's the plan. Yes, they are aware of the schedule constraint as far as school starting.
Any questions, comments? So we're done then, except for adjournment then.
If you want, I can go over some future agenda items.
Please.
Sure. We're expecting to bring just an update on the status for our bicycle-friendly community application. That was a few months ago, I believe, when we mentioned we're going to seek reapplying. So that application is due in August, but we'll have something next month just to kind of brief everyone here. There's our contract is up for an extension with MV, which is the transit operator, so we'll be bringing that forward. We've been working on a transit development plan, and that will be finalized. We'll be having a public meeting actually next week, and we'll provide any comments that we get from that as well. And then we'll be, as Darren mentioned, awarding the Hells Bells project, and also I believe the slurry seal program and the long line striping program will be up for award as well. So.
Questions, comments? If the NDOT director was correct and the bridge opens up, driving underneath the Snyder Bridge opens up next week, can you make sure that gets into the newspaper or out to the public so that I'm sure people will drive on it, but that has caused some restriction in that area.
And do we know if the bicycle lane signage in that area was ever corrected, or is that waiting until the bridge opens? I think we got both versions of that story at one point.
It's my understanding that it was corrected, but it once the bridge opens, then it has to be recorrected to do that. So we'll remind them of that.
Any other comments, questions, public comment? With that, I would like Mr. Mallory to make a motion to adjourn at his last meeting. I thank him.
So moved.
All in favor say aye and leave.
Aye.